You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some.
IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller.
Scoop!
Justin Davis is here.
Hey, guys.
And making his triumphant return to GameScoop is Charles Agnette.
I don't really know. No, this is
Mr.
Totally...
Slime.
Yes!
The Raging Canadian.
All of that was unnecessary.
He's a GameScoop all-star. That's the truth.
It's true. Great. Charles, you're making so many people's day right now just by sitting in this room and talking with us.
Well, I'm happy I can do that then.
The biggest news of the week is Elder Scrolls Online announced. Before we get to that, spoiler-free review of The Avengers. It's awesome.
Totally.
And everybody needs to go see it.
Word.
Yeah.
Through the credits.
Oh, yeah.
All the way to the
really?
End of the credits.
Another end credits thing?
But it's good.
It's the best end credits.
Does Samuel L. Jackson show up again and is like, I need you for a mission? It's like, we need
I'm
that
putting
already.
Together a team.
I'll be like, what?
This was already established.
I'll tell you what happened. He walks into high school and he's like, I need to see Peter Parker. And then it just goes to away.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know. Do you have any other comments you want to make, Greg?
My enjoyment for it has only aged over... has aged well over time. Like last night, me and Damon were waiting for Uber cabs, and we're like, "Man, that was a good movie. That was really fun." Blah blah. And we went through the parts we liked. And then this morning, I woke up and I'm like, "I love the Avengers!" And I'm like, I'm replaying scenes in my head and like giggling on the train. I'm like, "Oh, I gotta go see this movie." Again.
You told me earlier today, well, just now before we started recording, you told me that you loved it way more than Iron Man 1.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking that too. Yeah,
yeah.
For the longest time, people have thought that was like the best Marvel movie.
Yeah, totally.
It was the best.
Yeah,
Marvel.
No, totally. Yeah. That was the thing we were talking about. We watched Captain America this week. Damon got introduced for the first time and didn't like it.
He got really.
I didn't like Captain America.
Really
either.
Did not like Captain America.
I thought it was really boring.
The argument I kept making is that I, with the exception of Iron Man 1, I felt pretty much the same about all the movies. Just varying shades of it's okay. It was fun. It was whatever. It's fine.
Damon,
and like this was like the payoff to that of like we don't need to do the bullshit 2-hour hokey story of how they got their powers. Like they're just gonna fucking go do shit. Yeah. And you're like yes,
Thor's awesome. From Asgard and blah blah blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Damon not only didn't like Captain America, you aggressively didn't like
really,
it.
Really
it was one of those things. I think
you
he
were
was
mad.
He had the rest of the room liked it. The rest of the room was like, oh, this is a fun movie. And Damon's like, this is a. And like, that only got Damon more agitated.
Yeah,
he became the Hulk.
So, question I have, because I have not seen The Avengers yet. I did not go to the midnight screening.
Nope. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen it yet.
I know.
Get with
it's been
culture.
Out for 11 hours now.
I suck. But how spoiler conscious am I going to have to be on this? Is it the kind of thing where I'm just going to have to go, like, yeah. I'm not going to have to, I can't talk to anyone, I can't read anything about the
it's
Avengers?
It's going
to
be game over by Monday. People are going to be tweeting nonstop about this
I'm
thing.
Assuming, so I haven't seen it, so nobody be mad, this is not a spoiler statement, but I'm assuming since it's a Joss Whedon movie that someone...
I can't believe you said that.
That someone dies. Someone dies in every movie he's ever made. I don't know any spoilers, but that's just the assumption of someone that hasn't seen it.
Well, see, all right, I'm going to stop it right there because any possible response to that statement that's is true.
We will not respond. We will not
respond. I can't
well,
read.
Well, I mean, isn't that really just a cop-out, though, because every one of the movies leading up to this, somebody died, didn't they?
Well, I mean...
The guy who helped Iron Man build his suit.
The guy who made Captain America.
Thor's dad, right? He got killed. I think he didn't quite die.
I think now we're just spoiling every other movie.
Yeah,
that's true. Whatever. You had enough years to get this together, and they're based on comics you should have read.
And I also can't. Yeah, that means I can't read the GameScoop comments this week. I can't.
Oh yeah. See, that's the thing. You got it. And like, it's not because it wouldn't ruin the movie. Like, I mean, like,
go see it as soon as you can.
Exactly. It's one of those things where anything people would say about it, they're gonna be like quoting a line or whatever. And like that's why I wanted to see it last night. I wanted to see it right away to have that energy. And that was a really good crowd. Like they were really.
Yeah, and I'll say this. So there's two, you know, Easter eggs after the credits. There's like a cinematic version of the credits that just shows the actors and the director, and then the long list of credits. So in between those, there's an Easter egg, and the audience in the theater flipped their shit when they saw that. They freaked the fuck out.
I've been to plenty of midnight showings for comic book movies and blah blah blah. I've never seen a crowd lose their fucking mind like that. Like people standing up like, and cheering in the studio hall and like throwing their arms.
Man, that's pretty good.
You gotta go see it. Mike Mitchell, my roommate, tweeted like, "Oh man, I gotta see this. Who wants to go?" I'm like, "I want to see it."
Oh yeah,
I promised Christine I'd see it, but can I see it a third time? Why not?
Yeah,
I'll just waste all my money on the Avengers.
I think the best part about the movie, I mean, is the dialogue and the writing.
Totally,
I mean, they makes the characters so likable. I think that's what I think about when I think Joss Whedon. I think like really good writing, great characters, and he totally brought that to the Avengers.
A lot of humor. The action scenes were awesome. I thought they were totally great too.
And like this is a comment that Greg Miller made last night. The Avengers is the best Hulk movie ever.
Yeah, totally.
Other people have been saying that too.
So I saw. There's no spoilers in what I'm about to say, but I saw somebody tweet after a midnight screen, or not a midnight, I guess an advanced screening, saying that the Hulk steals every scene he's in, and it's totally fucking true.
It's because Mark Ruffalo is the shit.
Mark Ruffalo is awesome for sure. Yeah, and like just it's like such an awesome interpretation of the Hulk. And then I was talking about it with somebody today about that, one of our producers here, and we were talking about it just like. I think it's just because like a normal Hulk movie is such a downer. A normal Hulk movie is him not trying not to be the Hulk.
There's no happy ending for that guy.
Yeah, exactly. So it was so good. I want to go see it again.
Is it mostly action or is there a lot of dialogue as well?
It's a good mix.
There's a lot of action, but like I was saying, like really great dialogue, snappy dialogue too.
Okay,
it's great.
Mm. Awesome. Let's go right now. Fuck GameScoop.
I know.
Well, so I want to see it now, but I'm worried that if I don't see it immediately, I need to shut down the internet.
Exactly. No, that's the thing. Like, and like, there's plenty of things that I know that people will be tweeting and hashtagging and whatever.
Oh my god! Now you're making me all scared.
Yeah. So Greg and I saw it at midnight last night. I got home at 3:00. He got home at 3:30.
Yeah.
4 hours of sleep for me. So, but I feel okay right now.
Yeah.
I think this afternoon.
I'll need a nine side cup of Joe right after lunch, probably.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I'm hungry. I don't know what I want to eat.
Hmm.
It's been a rough week, Charles. I wasn't here over the weekend, Damon, so I didn't get my groceries delivered. I haven't been able to make Charles and I lunch.
I believe when there's no answer to that, the answer is always pizza.
I think it's the cutest thing that you make Charles a sandwich for lunch every day.
We help each other out. We have a good relationship going.
We got to get by somehow.
But it's like symbiotic. Then you pay him in beer on the weekend.
It's true. I think that's a good.
It's a good relationship.
It's a good partner system.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, end Avengers discussion. Begin Elder Scrolls Online discussion.
Okay, I'm going to bed. Wake me when this
Do you not care about Elder Scrolls Online?
No.
You have a gaming PC now, Greg.
I know.
You're a PC gamer now,
and
I thought.
It's time we have a conversation. I'm thinking about selling the gaming PC.
But you haven't even used it yet.
I look at it, I'm like, when am I going to use it?
Why did you buy that thing?
Because I want to play SimCity in a year. I really want to play SimCity.
It's a 2013 game.
I know. I don't know. I'm scared.
I thought you were going to play The Old Republic.
I had started the Old Republic before, yeah, and I was thinking about picking up my character, but then I'm just so into Reckoning.
I could have told
like,
you
anytime
how this
I feel like questing.
Dude, so you're
Diablo though. Diablo's
yeah,
coming
gonna,
up.
Are you gonna play Diablo?
I'm gonna play
you
Diablo.
You played the beta, right?
I played the beta. It was fun.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Did you kill the Skeleton King? Spoilers.
No.
There's a Skeleton King.
I got to like there was a glowing hole in the ground I was supposed to go down, but like then somebody came over and
see,
I stopped.
Did you call it a glory hole?
A glowing hole in the ground. There's a glory hole in the ground.
I think that's official Blizzard fiction. It's called The Glory Hole.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. There's always great ideas for what... I want to play that rocket ship game Anthony talked about on the show a few weeks ago.
Kerbal Space Program?
Sure.
Kerbal Space Program is amazing.
All right, fine. I'll play that this weekend.
So I didn't...
Project Zomboid.
I think some people are just console gamers. And I think that's you, Greg.
Yeah.
You and me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of us out there.
I do not disparage PC games in the least. It's just that's just not the type of gamers we are.
I do a lot of Steam, and then like I play through console games, and I just plug in my 360 controller. Like I got Dead Space 2 for $5. Like yeah. Played through that, used a 360 controller. Like it's exactly the same as playing on my Xbox, but it's just cheaper.
And like, you're not sitting on your comfortable couch.
Yeah, but I got
or you can just move your PC over to your, your TV.
What I do. That's how I play.
Yeah, I was sitting on my couch when I played that game. And I played through a lot of stuff like that. Just Cause 2. Like, once you get a powerful enough PC that it's as powerful as a console, and a lot of those games have, you know, just out-of-the-box controller support, it's awesome.
It's true. Even Terra, that launched recently, when you start that game up, it asks you specifically if you want to use a controller or if you want to use a traditional mouse and keyboard.
That one's out this week?
It launched on Tuesday. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
See, this is the issue I keep running into, though, is that, like, you know, Diablo I played for a while, and I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm looting stuff. But I'm like, man, I would rather do this in Reckoning and keep my save going. And then Steimer was trying to get me to play Terra. I was like, oh, man, if I'm going to sit down and play Terra, I'd rather sit down and play DC Universe Online.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd rather play DC Universe?
It's in the DC Universe. I don't know if you're aware of this, John.
All right. Well, I don't know. Maybe Terra's terrible later.
Terra?
God, I can't. Damn it. Did you like Terra a lot?
I'm sorry. I apologize for that profusely.
You like Terra, though.
Own it, exactly. It's fun so far. I'm still very early, so maybe it'll just turn into a total grind fest
later. Maybe I'll
try
it.
Combat system is definitely fun. It plays like an action game.
Okay. I haven't spoken to anybody yet that is not digging it.
Yeah. And the difference is, I mean, there are a lot of sort of online quote unquote MMOs out there, but a lot of them are when you actually go into the combat, you're just in a little instance dungeon or something like that with a group. This isn't actually an open world MMO where the zone is just open. There's a whole bunch of players running around, and it's an action system.
Cool,
which is cool.
Cool,
but Elder Scrolls Online.
Yes, sorry, I got this one way off topic there.
Yeah, we've known or suspected it for a long time.
Yeah, so ZeniMax Online Studios has been around for a while. They were established, I believe, in 2007 or something like that. But it's been years that they've just been sitting there, and we haven't known what they were working on. And all of the Fallout stories that have been going on with Bethesda, the lawsuit stuff, made some people believe that they were making a Fallout MMO.
Yeah, I mean, there's two options. They were either making Elder Scrolls or Fallout, basically.
Yeah, and now we finally have confirmation through Game Informer in their cover story that it is the Elder Scrolls Online, and it's supposed to come out next year, actually, for PC and Mac. There will be a Mac version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is great. So this is a game that they've been working on for 5 years with a team of 200-plus people.
They have a huge team on the game, and yeah, it's going to be from all accounts, it's going to be a completely fully featured MMO.
Yeah, like everything's voice-acted, just like in Skyrim, everything. I mean, it's completely bonkers, the amount of just how far along it is and how, can you imagine? And they managed to keep it a secret, like...
I mean, that was a very well-kept secret, considering the amount of attention, especially the Elder Scrolls has been getting since Skyrim came out. The game is still in, like, the top five on Steam selling.
Yeah.
Skyrim is.
Can you imagine if you were working on something for 5 years and you had to keep
it
a secret?
Couldn't tell anybody? God.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the reaction to Elder Scrolls Online. A lot of people think, well, I mean, the Elder Scrolls has always been a single-player game.
Right.
Very fiercely single player. And a lot of people have been like, oh, when are you adding multiplayer? And the response from Bethesda Game Studios is always the same. It's like, yeah, that's not happening. Like, we're not doing that. Or maybe when it makes sense, we'll do that, but we've never been able to figure out how to make it make sense within Elder Scrolls games.
I think we can't emphasize strongly enough that this is not the same studio that's made any of the Elder Scrolls games.
Yes,
it's a different team, and it's a different, and I'm sure they pulled people over, and the Game Informer story talks about how they're, how they're working so closely together, but, it's not the same team that made Skyrim or Oblivion or Morrowind.
Yeah, it is a totally different staff, and it will have an emphasis on PvP, which I think makes sense, because Matt Furor, who worked on Dark Age of Camelot, which had a realm versus realm PvP system.
Mm-hmm.
That's going the three faction PvP system is basically going to be built into Elder Scrolls Online as well.
So, you know, obviously there's still a tremendous amount of information that's under wraps. We don't know a lot yet, but the details that we do know are really making a lot of Elder Scrolls fans sort of rabidly upset.
Really?
Well, so Elder Scrolls fans are sort of rabid fans to begin with. And so when they think Elder Scrolls MMO, they think Skyrim, but run around with their friends. And like, that's not really how, like, the first time that you play Elder Scrolls Online and you come across a quest that's like, bring me back these 5 wolf pelts. Like, people are going to be pissed. Like, they're not going to like that. And, well, okay. So,
I mean, you still sort of have to do that in Elder Scrolls anyway.
A little. A little. So the world of the Elder Scrolls, what I think a lot of people don't realize is this game was bound to always disappoint because it's a let me explain.
Okay, I'm right here.
Because every single one of these games, the whole world is sort of orbited around the player. He's the center of the game world's universe. And now, like, you know, if I'm standing in town and, like, you know, I'm the savior, I just cleared this dungeon, and then there's some dude in this, like, gigantic glowing armor that's, like, bigger and stronger than me, and then it's just like, huh. Like, it's just going to feel weird.
It's not from the sounds of things, it is not going to feel like the offline single player Elder Scrolls experience, which, right. I mean, I don't know if anyone, I don't think you can really expect that. Like, in a massively multiplayer online game, you just, that is the nature of the product. Yeah,
they have latency to deal with, you know, they have, and you know, besides the technical limitations, they have design issues that they're dealing with. So, you know, we haven't mentioned yet, this is a third-person game. It's not first-person. It does use a hotbar for skills, you know, just like World of Warcraft, you can assign sort of, you know, you'll learn skills as you level up, and then you assign them to different slots.
And it's set across the entire continent of Tamriel. So right. It's not just a specific province. It's not like Skyrim, which is...
Yeah, you'll visit, you know, Skyrim, and you'll visit Morrowind and Cyrodiil.
Cyrodiil is actually going to be the PvP zone.
Yeah. So...
I was just saying, that would be cool, to return to Skyrim and know where locations are.
Yeah.
I think people are going to be disappointed in that. So Bethesda had a team of, you know, I don't know how many people, several hundred people working to build just Skyrim for years and years. But now that's just one region. Like, you're going to visit a city and be like, well, this is not as detailed or as big or as in depth of it as it was in Skyrim. Like, you're revisiting some of the same locations.
Yeah, it's going to be a different version. There'll be a different art style.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, the thing about this game is that it's just going to constantly be expanded over time. Sure. So even if certain cities aren't in at launch, if certain areas of specific zones of Tamriel aren't in at launch, you can expect them to be there later. And I would expect the kind of, you know, rollout that something like Turbine did with, like, Lord of the Rings Online, where it's like, hey, we're going to give you the start of the journey of the ring at launch, and then they just keep adding on to that, so you keep moving across the world. In that case, Middle Earth.
Overall, this definitely sounds less like Oblivion and Skyrim, but made multiplayer, and more like a traditional MMO just set in this world.
Now, here's the question for you. I have for you.
Yeah,
you're talking about how people are going to get bent out of shape. They're going to walk in and be like, "This isn't the Skyrim I remember." Yada yada. Are you projecting? You think too much about a console person doing that, PS3, 360. I mean, you're talking about, it's a PC MMO. Mm-hmm. Right there, we've narrowed the group have been narrowed down on who's going to get in there and want to play it. You know what I mean? Like, I would think most MMO players and most hardcore PC players who know Elder Scrolls are going to understand what they're getting into.
Yeah, I think MMO fans are going to know exactly what the deal is. I think that's fine. It's just that, in, like, Justin, to what you're saying, the person who has only been playing Elder Scrolls as a single player experience, maybe hasn't ever touched an MMO, doesn't really know how they work, might walk into Elder Scrolls Online and be like, oh, well, this doesn't feel like Elder Scrolls.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm projecting.
But I don't know. I haven't even seen the game yet, so I really don't know. This is all on information that's come out.
Your
so
face
far.
Is going to be red when it is just Skyrim multiplayer.
It's actually the same game. Yeah.
I'm projecting, like, my own feelings, but there's definitely a grop of hardcore Elder Scrolls fans that when they say third person, you know, third person, your skills are on a hot bar, they're like, I'm out. Like, there's totally people that are like that, and I don't think they're wrong. Like, they're taking what they loved about Elder Scrolls and taking it away. Like, it's something different. I mean, it's a different genre. It totally is. It's the MMO genre, not like Skyrim made multiplayer.
True. Well, GameScoop listener Anthony Mathers says he's sick of MMOs.
Okay.
He says, am I the only one that's sick of MMOs based on pre-established series? If the game is successful, we'll never see another entry in the regular series. If it fails, then the name value is considered weak and left to die. Case in point, Phantasy Star, Warcraft, Knights of the Old Republic, the list goes on, and now Elder Scrolls. When will this end?
I don't think that's true in the case of Elder Scrolls, just because they are different studios building those two games. So Bethesda Game Studios still exists, a separate entity from ZeniMax Online Studios. Both of them are huge studios. Yeah, and obviously they're well-funded.
And there's not much lore overlap. You know, Bethesda tends to move each of their Elder Scrolls games forward in time, and this MMO is set 1,000 years in the past. So both those games can exist, and, you know, it doesn't mean that Elder Scrolls 6 will you know, counteract something that the MMO does if it's successful and is still running.
Yeah, that's true. In this case, it does seem like there's plenty of room for ZeniMax Online to continue expanding the world of The Elder Scrolls Online, and then Bethesda Game Studios can just move ahead with whatever they're going to do with the single-player version.
And I want to temper
my... this way, but people will probably stop asking Bethesda Game Studios, when are you going to put multiplayer in your games?
And yeah.
Be like, no, we're fine with the single-player. It's sold like a gazillion copies, especially through PC with the... with the attention given to the mod scene through the workshop on Steam.
I mean, I think I've expressed that I'm disappointed in this news, but I'm totally willing to, like, I played World of Warcraft and loved it for years. So there's worse things than, like, you know, a really solid, well-put-together, well-thought-out, you know, strong PvP Elder Scrolls MMO. It's maybe not the game that I hoped they were going to announce, but it could still be awesome. You know, obviously there's still a lot sort of up in the air, and MMOs sort of live and die by their... you know, by their details, I guess. And
yeah, I mean, the way I usually approach MMOs is, you know, there are a lot of MMOs that get announced, a lot of screenshots and video that you can look at. But until you really sit down and play the MMO, not for 30 minutes, not for an hour, not for, you know, 2 hours, until you sit down and really play it for like a week and you really get a sense of how progression works, I think that's important. The frequency with which you get loot and things like that, the types of social experiences you can have with different classes, and once you actually unlock a class's full skill set, how versatile that is, how many different ways that allows you to approach combat, all that type of stuff contributes to whether or not it will actually be a good game.
Yeah.
And that's something we still haven't seen yet.
What was the final verdict on Wakfu?
I didn't play Wakfu. That is a random game to bring up, but I have not played
that
Wakfu.
That was an MMO I had to do a preview of, and I was interested in it. I get to run for office? I could be the mayor of this Wakfu town? Okay.
It's out. You can play it.
Yeah. I like the art style.
GameScoop fans, if you're a big Wakfu fan, let us know in the comments and tell me where you're playing, and if I could come in and you could just elect me president right away. If you can do that, if Greg can just walk in and become Wakfu president.
I don't know if it works like that.
There's voting. Okay. That's the thing. They have democracy. That's why I was very interested in it.
I feel like
it's also like on floating pedals and crap. Really,
I feel like you probably need to put in some time before you can be eligible for that kind of.
I'll come in to be somebody's secretary of the state, and then then they can die. They'll just kill themselves. And then it'll all work out.
I don't know if you've thought this through.
What are you gonna do? The burden of office is a heavy burden, Greg.
I'll tell you right now, there'd be no taxes anymore on the glim glams, those little things you ride around. No, sir.
And the glim glam tax.
This is my campaign platform.
That's it, though. That's it. That's no, all I would change.
There's other stuff. I'd get rid of the tenement housing down by the second moon. I don't like that one bit. I'll tell you, there's been a lot over at the Celestial Tide Pool. I haven't enjoyed the riffraff over there. I will double the security at the Celestial Tide Pool.
Sounds like you got a pretty strong
a chocobo in every pot.
You're mixing. You're
a beer in every fridge.
It is a fine ale. I think it is a Square Enix game though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's another example of a franchise that has gone MMO several times.
Very successfully.
Yeah. Poor Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
14 was just, it's still going. They're still proceeding towards their 2.0 alleged stuff. I haven't played it in a while.
Begin phase two.
That's still happening.
Yeah. I think Elder Scrolls, optimistic me, totally agrees with Charles. I'm like, maybe it's going to be awesome. Totally willing to give it a shot. Totally excited to run around, you know, the areas of Tamriel we haven't had a chance to see in person before. Pessimistic me sees this company started in 2007 at the height of World of Warcraft. And they say, fuck, we're going to make World of Warcraft, but we're going to do it in Tamriel. That's what pessimistic me thinks. So we'll just have to wait and see.
That's something we can't answer yet. I think what is clear so far is that it's just really not going to feel like the Elder Scrolls experience that everyone knows and loves. Yeah. It'll be something different.
That can be okay. We'll see.
But in some cases it has to be, because I don't know if you could really do the first person heavy type of exploration and combat type stuff that you get in traditional Elder Scrolls games in a massively multiplayer environment.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work.
Well, other Elder Scrolls news that was revealed this week is downloadable content is coming for Skyrim on Xbox 360 this summer, called Dawnguard.
That is the Dawnguard. There are no real details about that, although I believe it allegedly is supposed to involve snow elves.
Glowing eyes.
Of some snow kind. The art has the Dovahkiin
His eyes are glowing.
Marketing model with glowing eyes on it. But yeah, that'll have a brief period of exclusivity. I think it was 60, 90, 30. I can't remember the number of days. That was reported last year.
It was
year.
Divisible by three.
there was some specific number of days that it's supposed to be on 360 first, and then, I don't know, at some point later it'll come out.
Skyrim's on my list of meaning to get back to games.
Yeah, I'm playing Skyrim way more now than when it launched.
And your wife plays a lot of Skyrim.
Yeah, she beat the main quest before me. You can never predict what games that lady's going to be into.
Am I right, Greg?
She's a wild one. Don't glare at me. I didn't mean it in a weird way. I had a lovely time with her last night when we were eating.
Whoa.
It got weird, and then I was going to say when we were eating tacos, which would have made it weirder. Wow. But we did all go to Underdogs last night, and it was dynamite.
You're just digging that hole.
Charles, you were there. Help me out.
Was I?
She told me she was out with her girlfriends.
Okay. She met her Greg friends.
I did want to mention there was another PC related announcement.
There was
this week.
I was maybe going to say this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This right here.
Are we talking about?
My God.
We're talking about Company of Heroes 2.
Yes.
Yes.
That got announced.
That is really exciting.
So, explain to me why this is important.
Well, I actually don't know any details.
Don't know why.
No. I know why. I don't know any many specifics about the game. Although
I'm not familiar with Company of Heroes generally.
I believe the game is set in the Eastern Front.
Company of Heroes considered easily one of the best RTSs ever made.
Yeah, and it's by Relic. Oh. It's a World War II real time strategy.
Is that the one with the small squad where you like?
So yeah, it's not StarCraft style where you build up this complex base and send out this huge army.
It's like more tactics.
Huge player caps and stuff like that. It's much more about smaller unit counts, being really smart with the units that you have because they all have multiple uses on the battlefield. Base building really isn't very important. It's not a big part of the gameplay. It's more about how you use your troops in the field, and you have really cool destructible environments. Random elements that can happen in battles, like tanks, just, you know, parts of tanks being disabled and things like that. It's just a really dynamic kind of gameplay that you don't see in a lot of other places.
And now we're getting a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting.
And yeah. I haven't seen the game yet, so I don't really know much about what will happen there. But it also had a really cool single-player campaign, which is rare for an RTS.
Yeah.
Mostly it's about the multiplayer.
Apparently the Russian army is now playable.
Oh, well, there you go.
And it also had powers too. So you would rank up powers and then be able to deploy special powers onto the battlefield, which is more or less standard in a lot of RTSs. But at the time, it was really cool.
Mm. And that was supposed to come out next year. All these games are coming out next year. Yeah.
There's a lot happening on PC. Next year could be really interesting for the RTS scene on PC because you've got Company of Heroes 2. Whenever the next version of StarCraft actually comes out.
Yeah.
And then Generals 2, which we haven't heard much about since it was announced. But yeah, Command & Conquer Generals 2 is supposed to happen next year.
And speaking of RTSs, this Total War game just came out on iOS, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we know if it's any good?
I've played it. So other people really liked it. I didn't care for it.
Hmm.
I found it to be really slow, and I found it to be confusing. Like, units would fight, and one unit would win, but there's not enough transparent to the user. You can't see like a health bar or anything. So I'm like, well, did that unit get injured when he won the fight? Like, I don't know. And it's very sort of rock, paper, scissory, you know, what wins, which is normal, but like just obviously like, oh, spearmen beat horsemen, guys on horses. And it's like, well, okay. You know, I've seen that before. I wanted more for it, especially because it was made by the actual, it's Creative Assembly. Is that the people that make Total War?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's made by the actual Creative Assembly people. They didn't like farm it out to somebody else. So I held it to a higher standard for that reason. The main thing I didn't like was how slow it was. It's very slow.
Hmm.
Yeah. It needs a fast forward button badly.
And we're big fans of Saints Row the Third here at GameScoop. And this week we found out that a standalone expansion is coming out later this year. And what's interesting about this is that this was originally their April Fool's joke this year. They announced that this Enter the Dominatrix content was coming out for Saints Row the Third as the April Fool's joke, and now it's actually going to come out.
So what is it? I didn't...
It takes place immediately after the events of Saints Row. An alien warlord prepares to invade Earth. They capture you, the character, and then imprison him on an elaborate virtual reality simulation.
Yeah.
What's crazy about that is, like, that's not really a great April Fool's joke because Saints Row the Third is already crazy. It's like that's totally within the realm of possibility of, of Saints Row.
Like a VR premise is going to allow them to go like bonkers, way more bonkers than they did with like the normal game. Hopefully. Sure. I mean, that's my hope. Yeah. Like they have an excuse to do whatever they want now. Like,
well, yeah, they kind of had that already, but sure.
Yeah. But I mean, like, oh, now you're in dinosaur times. Ooh, like they can do anything.
But it's a standalone expansion, which is something you don't really see too much anymore.
So what does that even mean?
It'll be released as a resale disc for $30.
Cool. And won't require Saints Row to play.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
That's badass. Do you think, so does that mean, will we ever see like a Game of the Year edition that includes that on?
Maybe.
Although
I don't know that Saints Row won any Game of the Year awards, but
so well, if you that part doesn't matter.
If you had like you have your Saints Row character, will it read that character, or you have to like start from scratch?
That's a good question. You would think so.
Yeah, you would hope so. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know this marketing plan. Who knows? But I mean, it's THQ. I'm sure they'll bounce right back.
Aww.
Yeah.
THQ has Darksiders 2 coming out.
Yeah. Yep. And Company Heroes 2. Mm-hmm.
And no E3 booth.
Yeah. What's going on with that?
No E3 booth?
Okay. I guess there's nothing.
I didn't know about it until Goldfarb was talking about it at the movies last night. I had a head in a book yesterday just reading about olden times, and I didn't know what was going on.
You're always reading about olden times.
Which olden times are you reading?
Another really cool thing about Company Heroes, in case somebody's saying, like, oh, Company Heroes, I don't really understand what's going on. Like, the reason it's also cool is because it had a capture point style of gameplay. So when you were going around maps, you would actually have to move your units to specific sections of the map and capture a resource node and then hold that node in order to fuel your production. Like, you wouldn't have little workers running around gathering resources and stuff like that.
Zug-zug.
Right. So you wouldn't have the zug-zug aspect of the gameplay. You would have to move out into the field, capture, like, fuel and ammo, stuff like that. So the battle would... You would be encouraged to go out into battle. You couldn't really turtle. That was difficult. And because buildings could be blown up, even if you garrisoned soldiers in a specific building, you know, somebody could come in and blow that up, and there you go. You don't have that cover anymore. So it's a really dynamic experience that encourages combat. It's a lot of fun. Really fast-paced, too.
You sound excited.
I am excited. It was an excellent RTS that I was embarrassed several times online while playing, but that's the case with any RTS.
Sure.
Was there a Company of Heroes online or like a free to play version of it?
There was, and it was in beta, and I think their real money transaction system was actually live for a while, and then it just sort of went under.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems like the way to go, especially considering how many games on
except
PC
for the going under part.
Yeah, except
that's
for
not the way to go.
Except for the not working part, but that was weird when that happened because it seems like that's the way to go now on PC because there's so many free to play games out there now.
Yes.
GameScoop listener Brendan Ryan has a Steam code for Portal 2 they'd like to share with his fellow listeners. Portal 2 is my favorite game of last year. Justin's favorite game of last year.
Yeah.
I know Charles really liked it. Favorite game of last year?
No, I really liked it.
I
Portal 2 was my number 2 game last year.
Okay. Greg thought it was okay.
I love Portal 2. What are you talking about?
So we all owned it, so we don't need to read out the code.
Now you can get the code and you can go play Charles' room soon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that how
I can talk about that. Do you want to read the code first? Or?
Sure. I'll read the code. This is Portal 2. Fast fingers, listeners. The Steam code is NYAY9YVK02BTJYE. Whoever gets that, send good vibes to Brendan Ryan. Yeah, no, yeah. So, like, level editors are out now, yeah?
So this is, you could make levels for Portal before, but this is a super simplified, really easy to use level editor. That'll be out on, I believe it's May 8th for PC and Mac versions of Portal 2.
And it's an update to Portal 2, right? That's how you get it?
Yeah, it's free DLC. I mean, the way it works in Steam is you just basically sign in and then your game will update.
Cool.
And you will have this. And it just adds another option on the main menu, and you can just go to community maps and you can browse the workshop like you can do with Skyrim, and just download other people's creations. So they will post maps onto the Steam workshop. And you can go in, you can rate them, you can comment on them, you can subscribe to specific users if you really like their stuff, and then just download the maps and play them right there.
So the big thing that jumped out to me about this Portal Maker, this level editor, was you've all seen the Portal trailers from like the Three-Force overhead view where it's like giving you a little diagram of the portal. Like
that's,
like that's literally what this editor looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the editor itself, if you have an idea for a puzzle chamber and you want to go in and use it, requires absolutely no technical skill. It basically works like Windows. It's all drag and drop and right click functionality that brings up other menus that you can then interact with things.
Like, I want a door here, I want a laser here, I want this switch to affect this laser, and it's all done from this like bird's eye view, and you just like drag, like if you want to make a wall bigger, you just drag it up. And it I couldn't believe it's actually kind of amazing.
Yeah, so they're really,
that's kind of Valve, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, considering how complicated it could be, it's pretty amazing that it's all been boiled down to the super simple interface. So pretty much anyone who has played Portal 2 and thought, eh, you know, this would really be kind of a cool idea if they just move this over here or move this over here, then you can just do that. And you can upload it online, and if it's good, people will upvote it, and you will, you know, get Steam famous.
It's one of those things I can't imagine making a Portal level. Like, and maybe it's just because I haven't sat down and fooled around the
thing.
You'd
have to be really smart.
I mean, Charles made a great one. Like, I
didn't, actually. You broke it within 3 seconds.
But it was fun, and I had to sit around and think and look around and figure out what I was doing.
Yeah, and I think that's a good opportunity. A lot of people, when they're playing games, think like, oh, I could design puzzles in games. I could be a level designer in a video game. But now there's no technical requirements to do this. This is a good opportunity for you to test, like, can you truly design a smart, clever puzzle? Like, there's nothing technical getting in your way.
So yeah, there really aren't any barriers to whatever kind of creative ideas.
Did you sketch yours out before you did it?
No, I mean, like, you can just go in and sort of see what works. What I didn't find is there doesn't seem to be a way to really make sure that you can't run a check and be like, can you actually get to the end of this puzzle? So you basically have to keep hopping in and running through it to make sure it works properly. But I mean, if you upload a puzzle that's just stupid, then nobody's going to play it. I mean,
it's stupid.
It's going to get downvoted, and it's not going to show up when you. I mean, there's filters in Steam, so you can say, I want to look at the top rated of all time for puzzle chambers on Steam, and then, you know, you're never going to be in there.
I'm so pumped. I'm so excited. So Portal 2, one of that game's design philosophies was that it wouldn't require portals that you needed to do fine motor skills. Like, you never needed to shoot a portal in the air, like, when you were moving to solve any puzzles in that game.
There were a couple of reflex-based stuff.
Really? I believe you, but they toned it down. Like, that wasn't their emphasis, and so now people can go nuts. Like, you can have like super hard puzzles. You can do whatever you want.
And I hope what happens is kind of what you see with games like Trackmania, where people just come up with entirely new ideas, like push forward courses in Trackmania, where it's just these crazy tracks that you basically just drive, and then you go through these insane loops and things like that. Because people could just have grav lifts, like the gravity cylinders that are in Portal. You can just have those, drawing people up and dropping people onto faith plates and stuff like that. So you could just have these endless loops of motion through crazy chambers and things like that. It could be really cool.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
But yeah, it's a good way in case people haven't been, you know, you were done with Portal after the single player and co-op. This just seems like a really cool opportunity to get back in and just keep playing. And it's free.
Now you're never done.
you'll never stop.
You're never finished. Shame on you.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like BJ Bumgarner did.
He writes in a lot.
He says, I have a couple questions related to Diablo 3. Who is reviewing it, and how will it be reviewed, seeing how the online servers won't be up until after lunch? Will your review be delayed?
Charles. I can answer that.
Go, Charles.
We have Anthony Gallegos is scheduled for the Diablo 3 review, and Blizzard products past, just like with StarCraft 2, like with anything, you know, World of Warcraft, we have to wait until the servers go live. You know, you can't start playing the game until Blizzard flips on Battle.net, and because Diablo 3 is not an offline game, there is an online-only requirement for Diablo 3. You cannot actually start playing the game until Blizzard's like, okay, you know, Battle.net's up, go. Yeah. So we are in the same boat as everyone else in that respect.
Anthony's in for a fun week that week.
It'll be a sprint, but that's how it goes with some games. That's actually how it works with a lot of PC games, is you don't really get, you know, sometimes we do get early code, which is great, but a lot of the time we're just waiting until the game goes live, either for, piracy concerns with distributing early code, or it's just because you can't, either you're playing a beta beforehand, or you just have to wait for the actual game to go live on the launch day.
Speaking of getting games early... Shauria Dagra writes in saying, from the lengthy previews of PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale and Call of Duty Black Ops 2, it is easy to realize you know about games that are about to be announced and normally have also seen them. Now, my question is, on average, how much time earlier do you know about a new game before it is released, and how likely it is that you already have seen it and written up a preview of it?
All depends on the game and the company and everything else. For PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, terrible name. Colin,
you're gonna be saying that for the rest of the year.
I know. I'm just gonna go back to Title Fight.
Can you just call it Paul Stars?
Paul Stars, that works too.
That's good.
Colin saw it on a Wednesday, and then it went live on a Friday. And then he saw God of War. Him and Goldfarb saw God of War on Thursday, and then that went live Monday morning. Right? Yeah.
So sometimes it's different. You know, sometimes we have very, very, very strong rumors from friends in the industry. Like, we basically know stuff's happening, but we haven't seen it. You know, sometimes we know nothing. Sometimes, you know, and everything in between. Like, yeah. You know, there's...
I have embargoes right now through E3 on stuff I saw last month.
Yeah. And I would say, I think part of that question was, you know, do you have something prepped and ready to go for whenever it's announced? And I mean, I can't speak for you, but not really. Like,
it all depends. Yeah. It's one of those things. I think our job is so much moment to moment. Like, I have a review tomorrow and I have this tomorrow and this is happening and there's this announcement at 6 a.m. that usually, if you give somebody a long lead, they usually, at least me personally, I let it sit until it's time to do it.
Yeah,
you know
too.
What I mean? That way I have my work prioritized properly.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, there will be an interesting announcement about an upcoming game next week. We already have the news. We have a trailer to go along with it, and we're just sitting on it. It's embargoed until a certain date and a certain time, and we're just waiting to hit the publish button.
Yep. Is that Extreme Ghostbusters 2 on Game Boy Advance?
Yes. So, sometimes that happens, and then sometimes we're just as surprised as anybody.
True.
Yeah.
This is Anthony Gutia. With E3 right around the corner, what's your level of excitement for this E3 compared to past E3s? Oh, this is Big Tony style, by the way.
Big Tony style.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not as excited about E3 as, like, last December. I was thinking this E3 was going to be a monster show. I thought it was going to be Wii U. I thought it was going to be the next Xbox. I thought it was going to be the next PS3. I even wrote an article about how I thought Half-Life 3 was going to be announced and ran it as a top story, which is totally not the case. I was completely wrong.
Yeah, if we were seeing the next Xbox, if we were seeing Half-Life 3, I'd be a lot more excited than I am.
But yeah, it sounds like it's going to be Microsoft talking about Kinect a lot, Sony probably talking about Move, and I guess probably about Vita.
They better not fucking say a goddamn word about Move. You talk about the Vita, you talk about your games, you get off the goddamn stage.
and then Nintendo, I mean, the Wii U will be there, but it's like the two major players in the fight are not going to be there with their new hardware.
I mean, honestly,
unless they're lying, unless
I'm not super excited
totally
for it.
Lying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They're lying to our face. I'm not super excited for it, and in a lot of ways, it kind of just feels like an inconvenience. Like, can you just come show me these games? Like, really?
Yeah. So we're already starting to hear about the games that are going to be announced, and I'm sure they'll be cool. They'll be fine, but like, none of them are like blowing us away. Like, oh my god.
That Elder Scrolls Online announcement was probably one of the biggest announcements.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I mean, Sony showed all those games last week and stuff that are cool, and I didn't get to go to Hollywood, so I want to go play them. But again, it's like, could you just bring them to me? I don't want to go down there. It's hot. I'm going to walk around.
Yeah.
Hopefully the press conferences are super awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always surprises, right? There's always the one more thing.
That'll be exciting.
But it's also fun to go down there and hang out. I mean, I'm not, like, dreading it. Don't get me wrong. I don't send any emails about how I'm entitled and an asshole or whatever, or jaded or something, because I'm not. It's just like...
Yeah.
I mean,
it will be fun. That's always a really fun week.
E3 is great. Yeah,
it's always. We've all been to many, many E3s, and you know, we do get to see games kind of early, and you know, it does sound jaded or whatever, but the sort of luster of the show wears off after a few years, and then it's just about like the work and the games you got to cover.
I mean, yeah, keep in mind that you know this is our job.
We are very, very busy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's. But for me, this will be my 10th E3 this year, and it's more about catching up with people that I don't get to see that often.
That's true, people that
don't live in San Francisco or whatever. Everyone in the industries in that one place,
true.
And that only happens a few times a year. So I'm very, very excited to see the games, but I'm almost more excited to just catch up with folks.
For sure.
I was just very excited to see or hear about actual next-gen plans.
Yeah.
I was it's time. This is going to happen. And then Sony and Microsoft were like, nope.
Yeah.
It's like, crazy. Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So if it's true, if there will be no mention of next Xbox or PlayStation 4, it's interesting that Microsoft and Sony would let Nintendo have that far of a lead ahead of them.
Well, I mean, but the news leaked a little while ago, or not leaked, I guess, whatever. But I remember reading a story that it turned out the Wii U wasn't as powerful as like PS3.
No, but it's at least they're talking about it and it's coming out, and you know, but
yeah,
there's buzz building. There's already buzz building for it. You know,
is there?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I want to play the next Smash Brothers, but I'm scared that that game isn't going to come out for like four years.
Yeah, last year it was just a cocktail napkin, and this year they're like, well, we're thinking about it more. I mean, honestly, to me, and this is maybe because I hang out with you guys and we're talking to industry people. For me, like them letting them have the stage is them just giving them the rope. Go ahead, hang yourself. What are you going to have? What are you going to show? What are you going to do? Game of the Year? There you go. Keep taking it.
But like, you don't really know. Like, you know, the Dreamcast came out early, and that ended up kind of being part of that system's downfall. It wasn't as strong as, you know,
exactly.
Powerful,
if it comes out and it's not as powerful as the PS3 and everything else, and the online's still shoddy, it's gonna be like whatever.
But then like the 360 coming out a year early was a big part of the reason why that system dominated. Yeah. So you don't really know.
I mean, that's even though
the system broke down for like a
million.
Yeah.
That's the big question gamble, and that's why it is exciting anytime somebody does new consoles. Yeah. What does it mean? Because I mean, like, remember when nobody was excited for the Wii? Like, really? I was excited because I wanted to play NES games, and I got it. It's like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And then everybody bought it, and they're like, holy crap, and this thing just, like, destroyed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone tweeted at me today. Said they're listening to old GameScoops. I don't know when this was from, but apparently some time ago, I asked the question, do you think we'll still be playing the Wii in 2012?
What was the answer?
Well, no, we're not.
Oh, no, but
I don't know about that then.
I didn't know if we predicted it or, like...
No, I don't know. That's all they tweeted.
Okay.
But, yeah, so as it is now, if the next Sony and Microsoft consoles are not at E3, then they would be announced next E3, would be my guess.
Yeah.
That they would still
come out the fall.
I mean, I would assume that Sony and Microsoft would still use E3 as an announcement platform, or maybe they'll just spin off and do their own thing.
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing when you're thinking about the timetable for how all this would work, it would strike me that you would have an announce event like before E3. Then at E3, you actually show your lineup and give this big thing and the price. And this is for next year. The price and the date. And then it's the fall that it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, they have to announce that it's coming prior, you know, sometime in the spring, I would guess.
Yeah, it's just for the past cycle of consoles, I remember there was a longer announcement cycle. Like, we knew about the consoles similar to what Nintendo did with Wii U. It's like, we know about Wii U for a while. Then they do, like, this E3, they'll do the full reveal. And be like, here's all this stuff that's happening, I assume.
But it's just a different climate,
right? Microsoft and Sony are just like next year saying, oh, here's our new consoles, and then it comes out next fall or something like that, it seems like maybe it wouldn't even come out until the year after, maybe.
You figure it's all about...
They're just... The console cycle for them just seems to be constantly pushed back further and further.
Well, it's all about sales and actually being a cycle, right? Like, Nintendo noticed the Wii sales were tapering off now, so they're like, alright, we sold as many Wiis as we can, here's the next thing. Where Sony and Microsoft are still seeing that uptick of, like, People are still buying these things left and right. Let's keep going. Especially PlayStation, as far as, like, we have momentum. Let's keep going. Let's try to keep, you know, get it out there and get it to people. And then you announce a PS4, then everybody who is on the fence about PS3 now, like, oh, well, I'll just wait.
All right, this is Sam Kerr. He says, although it's never going to happen, what do you think of the idea that games should be priced according to their Metacritic score?
What?
The better a game is, the more a publisher can charge for it, thus giving people true value for money.
Nope.
Is this an idea that people talk about? I've never heard of this idea.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a hypothetical.
Well, like, I don't want to pay $100 for Batman Arkham City.
There you go.
Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that idea. I think there's like the. I don't know. I was about to say that I like that there's just an industry standard.
Yeah.
And then, like, games should meet a level of whatever you're looking for to get that standard. But that's totally not right anymore because I love the fact that Fez is cheaper and I love the fact, you know what I mean, like, downloadable games and how all these things factor in and on top of them being this, like, $60 game.
Yeah, I do think that they're right. More stratification in the pricing is very much a good thing, and that's part of the reason why I like PC gaming and mobile gaming is, you know, Square Enix releases, you know, big, giant $20 RPGs on the App Store right alongside little 99-cent apps, and they, you know, they both exist on the same storefront, but they fill very different roles and very different categories, and neither one, you know, needs to exist at the expense of the other. And I'd like to see that more on consoles. You know, why? Gotta be $60. That's it.
Yeah.
You know.
And I feel like a lot of that pricing takes care of itself because if somebody puts a game out that's crappy, that's $60, nobody is buying that game.
And right to markdown.
You may have launch sales where people got excited about it, but after that, it's just, there's nothing is going to happen there. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the game is really good, like Skyrim, and it's still selling on Steam for $60, then, you know, it's just going to keep doing that because there's that much content in the game. It's that good.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have any stats to back this up, but my gut tells me that prices are dropping faster now. You know, it's like they're capturing, like, people are excited. Well, you know, let's charge $60 at launch for the people that are pumped and jazzed about it. You know, and then we'll capture more people at $40 and more at $30 and then on down.
I guess the way to put it is I like that right now there's pretty much a ceiling, right? There's a $60 ceiling, and then anything can happen below that, and things can move. Somebody tweeted at me the other day that I clicked on this Amazon link, and it was Duke Nukem Forever for $5 new. I was like, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And I think
that game's not even a year old now.
Yeah.
And the growing awareness of free-to-play products, it's, you know, that's just going to draw people in and be like, wait, I can get a pretty much a comparable experience with this title without paying anything up front to play it. Like that, that's too strong an incentive for the $60 model to really stick around for games that aren't Call of Duty and aren't Elder Scrolls and stuff like that.
And I think some publishers are able to get around that $60 ceiling with special editions. You know, and yeah, you get the Halo Cat helmet and you get whatever else, but
that's a small group of early adopters.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, give people, you know, if people want to give you more than $60, you know, by all means, let them give you more money, you know, from a business perspective, and you know, so they're. I like the special editions because I don't feel like I need to buy them. I don't care, but you know, it's there for the super fans.
This is Steve Gale. On last week's Game Scoop, you guys briefly talked about Apple sometimes having an adversarial disposition towards games on their platforms. You spoke as if it was a matter of common knowledge, but I was hoping you could elaborate on evidence of Apple having an anti-game attitude. Did Jobs ever actually say anything openly antagonistic towards the industry?
Wait, was I on that Game Scoop?
Yeah.
Well, you know, now that we have a follow-up question about it, I can't point to any specific examples, I guess, but again, it's sort of a gut thing, or the sense that I get is that Apple is a company that backed into video games. You know, they didn't consider themselves a video game company. They didn't consider the App Store, you know, a video game delivery platform. It was just one of many categories, and then it just happened to be the dominant category. Like,
I thought I've read things about that before, seen stories about it before. That, like they weren't expecting that, and then he didn't want, like, Jobs didn't want a controller ever with it. Like, he didn't see the value in that and stuff like that.
And and the big story is in the very early days of the iPhone. They didn't want to have third-party apps at all. Steve Jobs didn't. He said, no apps, only our own apps. No, nobody else is going to be able to make apps for our phone. And thank God he got talked out of that, because that's why the phone is so incredible. You know,
but
so.
I think maybe where I see antagonism is that the fact they made an incredibly successful gaming device, whether they intended to or not, but they don't really capitalize on it, you know?
No.
And they seem to just sort of like ignore the fact that they have a gaming device.
They're finally figuring it out. It took them too long. You know, it took them several years of games being all the top-selling apps on the App Store. It's always games. And then years later, they're kind of like, oh, games, you know, we need to hire. So they actually hired a bunch of IGN folks, you know. They're staffing up their gaming group, and you know, they're much, much better now. But I guess if I did say antagonistic, I take that back. That wasn't the right word, but they just didn't seem to care.
There's also the fact that they always make their announcements like right at during GDC.
Oh, well, that's a little antagonistic.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah. Right next to Moscone Center during this big gaming event. They're like, oh, no, we're going to make our own big announcement.
Yeah, that part's true. And I think if I didn't, I meant to, but this is very similar to Facebook and their games platform. You know, Facebook, if you look at the adoption of Facebook and how that platform got so popular, it happened at the exact same time that Farmville and these other games started to come out. And they didn't consider themselves... Like, if you were to ask Mark Zuckerberg, like, oh, is Facebook a, you know, a platform to deliver games to people? He'd be like, well, no. But, like, it's absolutely – they owe a big part of their success to Zynga and these games. And Apple owes a big part of their success to, you know, Rovio and the companies that are making games on their platform. But neither one really wants to think of themselves that way. And I guess that's what I mean about them – You know, Sony's like, totally, we do video games.
Please make us games.
Right. Like,
please do something.
It's different than Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, if you were to compare them.
Sure.
They don't own their gamingness in the same way. They need to own it.
Yeah, they could be another first party
hardware
manufacturer, but they don't really position themselves that way.
No, like Apple, like, why doesn't Apple make first party iPad games, right? Like,
why don't they make a first party controller?
Right, like, exactly.
Why don't they make a first party? Party!
I mean, they may not... I mean, they do show it in their ads and things like that, in their marketing. You can see they do highlight gaming and things like that. And yeah, I mean, they're very much in the market. The new iPad is a major competitor.
Yeah, I mean, the new iPad is very, very powerful. The graphics processor in it is, you know, is hot. And the only reason to do that is games. You know, you don't need that for web browsing. You don't need that for ebooks. You know, they clearly did that to, you know, compete with... handhelds. You know, that's why that chip's in there. So yeah. So Charles, the last thing I'd say about this is everything that I'm saying is in the past. Like Apple is completely on board. You know,
are they now? I don't know about that.
It seems to be that way. So not completely on. Not completely on board the way that, like, Sony's completely on board with video games or Microsoft is, but, you know, they have a games group of people that they have people in that company that know what they're doing with video games now. And, you know, they're making their mobile devices more powerful than ever.
When Apple has a press conference at E3, that's when they're completely on board.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
That'd be cool.
I feel like they're just trying to do their own thing. They're like, we are ruling this market without having to directly engage with it.
Yeah, why would they go to E3? Like, it's working out well for them so far.
Yeah, they're just like, everyone's buying these devices anyway, so, you know, you have to deal with us. We don't have to deal with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good position to be in.
And everyone's like, okay, because everyone's buying iPads.
I guess so.
I was reading today that Kindle Fire is not it sold really well at Christmas when it came out, but
yeah, yeah, it was still, like $70, $99 or something, right? Yeah,
it was $199, still that's cheap enough.
There was cheap one though, wasn't there?
There's still the normal Kindles, like the E-Ink Kindles, but the one that has the LCD color screen is $199. Mm.
Last question comes from Derek Howell Peterson. He has a very thoughtful question. Dear IGN, can you tell me which version of every game is better on Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3? Let me know if you get this message.
The answer is PC.
Message received. <Yeah.
laughs> All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, listeners. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. I leave you this week with a sample of my latest song. It's called Ninja Challenge. Big shout out to GameScoop listener Dennis Mortensen for mastering the track for me. He masters all my tracks, always makes my music sound amazing. This is Ninja Challenge. It's available right now in iTunes, Amazon, and Spotify. Check it out. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out. Operational.
Get some.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.